All right. You guys okay?
Yeah.
Good. We are starting this new series that will lead us up to our unexpected show, looking at this idea of what it means to be a beholder. I'll start one of my favorite Bible verses. You guys finish it for me, okay? Beauty is in the eye of the... Good job. It's not in the Bible, by the way. It's not a Bible verse. It was like Shakespeare or Ben Franklin something. I don't know, but... that's actually the only time that I can think of using the word beholder in a real life conversation ever in my life. It's not a word that we use much, and it's, depending on the version of the Bible, maybe not a word that you see much as you're reading along. In the King James Version, it was in there 1,298 times, so quite a bit. But when we stopped saying behold, we started translating it differently, and basically is translated things like, you know, the Bible equivalent of hey, or yo, or like over here. Look, it's translated look a lot in the NIV. And it quite simply means to see. But in a very sort of real, present, open, ready way. To see something, but to see it in a very real, open, present, ready kind of way. So behold. When I think about that, I think about the times in my life where I could use that word to mean that. I am the proud dog parent to a beagle and a Labrador retriever. And the lab does such a better job of beholding me than the beagle. The beagle loves me if I have food, and I'm the most important thing to him, but the lab just loves me more than any creature on planet Earth, including my amazing wife and kids. That dog loves me. And when I walk in the door, you would think it won the dog lottery every day, and she won't keep her eyes off of me. Now, granted, I do feed her and take her on walks, and it's all part of a game we're playing, but the look in her eyes is a look maybe we don't see too often in our human eyes as we look at one another. One of the classic beholding moments that people have in their life who may happen to be a part of a wedding ceremony is when you see your spouse come down the aisle for the first time. I had that experience. Debbie and I got married when we were super young. We have now been married longer than we were alive before we got married, which is crazy to think about. But I was 21. She was 20 when we got married. And I knew so very little about anything at all, except that I deeply loved her. And I can remember, just like in the movies, when the church doors open in the back and she appears and looking as beautiful as she's ever looked before, starts walking down the aisle. And I can tell you, I wasn't at that moment thinking about anything other than her and what we were about to do together and how much I loved her. And it was one of the most pure sort of beholding moments of my life. She comes down. She's looking at me the whole time. Of course, I'm sure feeling the same way. And I whisper, "I love you." And she whispers, "You stink." That's our wedding story. My groomsman had smoked cigars, unbeknownst to me, in the hotel room where my tuxedo was. And so that's not the real point of this story. Except I can tell you I love her so much that every single time she walks into a room, I feel the exact same way. It's not true. I wish it were. I do love her that much. I do. But I forget to feel that every time she walks in the room. And to my credit, she does not think I stink every time I walk in a room. But there are still moments. I say all the time that I haven't made any sort of tragic, terrible mistakes in my life, but I've made a ton of little ones. A lot of misguided decisions. And the best decision I ever made was fortunate that I found someone who would love me no matter what, and I loved her back. And so there definitely really are those moments, but it's when you least expect them. It's across the table eating. It's watching her comfort a friend, and it all comes back. And there is truth to the statement that the longer you're in a relationship, the more intentional at times you need to be to remind yourself to behold. to be present. I remember when I held my first son, Eli, in the hospital. First couple times I held him, I was terrified, and nothing happened. Like, you hear all these stories about how you hold your baby for the first time, and all of life comes into perspective, and you have an incredible moment. I didn't have that. I just had fear, 100% pure fear. I'm an only child. That was kind of the first baby I ever held in my life, was my own, and I was just terrified. And then about 5 or 6 nights later, in the middle of the night, I was holding him, and it did happen, where I just, everything sort of cleared up, and I had this moment, this beholding moment, where I saw what was in front of me in a very real, open, present, ready sort of way. I saw him. Those are the big moments of life, right? The moments where it's sort of easier to behold. But we do it all the time. They don't always have to be these huge, life-changing moments. It's just those moments when we're present, open, and ready. When those moments happen, it's as if time stands still a little bit, and we just experience that. We experience this every time we watch a really good movie. And we experience the opposite of it every time we watch a terrible movie. That, you know, you walk in and Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga do their thing, you know, and then it's 2 hours have passed and you're like, that's going to win an Academy Award, and that was great. Or you try to watch a Transformers movie and it's terrible. Like, it's sort of the same thing, right? And the problem is, I think in our world, more than any other time in history, I do believe we have a beholding problem. We spend most of our time and almost all of our money trying to not be present, to not really be in the moment. 3 years ago, I had the opportunity. I always wondered what it would be like to be a college professor, and I had the opportunity to do that part-time. I was just going to teach one class for an entire freshman class coming into university. It was a Bible class, which is what my degree is in, so it's technically the only thing I could actually teach. But I was excited about it. I was just supposed to tell these kids the story of the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament all the way through for the whole year. And I love telling the Bible stories, and I thought, man, these kids are so lucky to have me. This is going to be great. And it was an 8 a.m. class Monday, Wednesday, Friday with 150 freshmen in a lecture hall. And I appreciate that most of you are now at a place in your life where you can at least pretend to be listening to me. Because, you know, I can sort of see you, and that's cool. We got this all worked out. They weren't there yet. So I remember that a third of them in the back slept every week. Halfway through, they started bringing blankets. I'm not kidding. Because it was a mandatory class that they had to take to whatever to graduate. And then the middle third of the students, they were just on their phones the whole time. Which, when I went to college, way back in the dark ages, we didn't have cell phones, so you actually had to pretend to listen to your professors, but now they just do this. The good news is they were paying like $400 a credit hour to do that, so somebody's winning, I guess. But then there was these guys on the front row, happened to be 6 kind of bigger African-American guys. And I remember teaching, I was in the second or third class, I was telling the story of Jacob from Genesis, who ends up getting tricked into marrying the wrong sister, and marries, the Bible says, the ugly sister instead of the pretty one, and then 7 days later marries the other one I talked about. And I just remember at some point in that story when I said something, one of the guys just said, "That ain't in there." I was like, oh, someone's listening. And so I ended up having a great semester because I just talked to those guys the whole time. They never heard the stories. They came up afterwards. They're like, I never heard about Abraham or Moses. Or, you know, basically saying, I came here to play football. This is my favorite class, one of them told me. I'm like, you guys are awesome. This is going to be fun because there's some weird stuff in there. And we're just going to talk about it for the rest of the year. And on the days when I focused on the people that weren't paying attention, it was a hard gig. But when I realized there's more than them, there's about 20, 30 kids up front, really wanted to learn this stuff, really open, being present, receiving it, receiving these stories as if it's the first time they'd ever heard them, because for many of them it was. That was real. That was energizing. That's what it feels like to be in a moment when you're present and you're listening. Now, because it was only a third of them, I didn't do that the next year. I didn't want to do that. But it was a great year for that one year. I think we spend a lot of our life these days living in the future. Or some of us, we live in the past. And it has become more and more a lost art to live in the present. It actually should be our normal way of operating. And we know this. We get, I've told you this before. I don't hold much back. I struggle with anxiety and depression some. And I've been doing good the last several years. But one of the things I notice is when I start to get really anxious, it's because I'm focused on the future. When I start to get really depressed, sometimes it's because I'm focused on the past. But when I'm in present, I'm generally pretty okay, because this is the only real moment we have. The past has already happened. That's why it's the past. You can't do anything about it. The future is a myth. It may or may not turn out the way you think. All we have is this moment. This is why one of my least favorite things in the world is the phrase, pics or it didn't happen. Like, pictures or it didn't happen. You kids know what I'm talking about? So it's a fun thing people say, like something crazy is going on in my life, and you put it out there in social media, and people say, take a picture or it didn't happen. And generally it's all only about food, best I can tell. There's nothing like being delivered a delicious plate of food that you're ready to eat, and everyone at the table makes you take pictures of it. It's replaced grace in our culture. It's that moment where you have to wait to eat. And that is symbolic, maybe the tip of the iceberg of this reality, that there's something about the being present in a moment that we don't embrace. Some friends of mine got married a few weeks ago, a month ago. We got to go to a destination wedding. It was beautiful. It was awesome. And for the first time in my life, I picked up the wedding program when it was time for their wedding, and it said, please don't take pictures on your phone. Please turn your phones off for our wedding. And that's kind of where we are now. When you see pictures of people meeting a president or the Pope or some, all you see now are these people just holding up phones. And we're so busy capturing the moment that we forget to live the moment. And I'm not anti-Instagram. I'm fine. That would cause significant problems in my life if I didn't allow her to take pictures all the time. But I do get to whisper to her sometimes, you can just let it happen. Just let it be. This is reality, actually, whether it's captured or not. So what I thought we'd do is, as we prepare and launch into this series, we're not even going to get to the Christmas story tonight. We're going to just look at the Hebrew Scriptures, or the Old Testament, at this unfolding of a story where time and time again, when people interact with God, there's this word, behold, or look, or be present. In Isaiah chapter 7, there is this verse that prepares us for the Christmas story, right, for the Advent. Isaiah says, therefore, the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, look, hey, what's up, right? Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which means, Emmanuel means God is with us. Implies we are with God. I think the word Emmanuel itself is a way of saying, behold, be present. It took Jesus coming for us to know what had always been true and what will always be true, that God is here. God is present. Of course, in a remarkable, universe-shattering, world-changing way in the birth of Jesus. But apart from that, God is as present now as God was when Jesus walked. God was as present before. As Levi said earlier, God is love. And in those moments of love, we sense and know that God is here. And the reality is, you know, a lot of us use language, I've used it myself too, that we're seeking after God, or we're trying to find God, or looking for God. And what we often mean by that is we're trying to figure God out, trying to learn something about God, trying to make some decision about God. That's all fine. But the reality is, one of the easiest things to ever do is to be with God. Because God is here. God is present. And so many of the Bible stories, these beholding stories, are people realizing that God is present and that maybe God has been there all along. And so I think there's three ways to be a beholder. It's to be open, to be present, and be ready. And so the first story, this is not, I'm just getting water, don't get excited. I'm like, this looks like an exciting visual aid I'm going to pull out. It's not. It's just. One of my favorite stories, because it is so foundational to both the Jewish and Christian faith, is the calling of Moses. And I've told you this story a couple different times through the years. I know you guys all keep track to make sure I don't tell stories over and over, but this is such an important one, I think, for us to understand how God gets our attention. And it's a story commonly called the story of the burning bush. So without giving a ton of the early details, when this story starts, Moses is 80 years old, and he's been a convicted felon for 40 years. He grew up, as we know, thanks to Steven Spielberg and Charlton Heston, right? He grew up in Pharaoh's house as a royal, but then when he was 40 years old, he killed someone and was sent on the run. So for the last 40 years, from age 40 to 80, he has worked as a shepherd, worked for his father-in-law, Jethro, and walked around a mountain with a stick, bopping sheep in the head. That's what he's been doing for 40 years. And a lot of times I think we have this image of a shepherd in the Bible, especially when we think of Bible shepherds, we think of like green pastures, like Ireland with a crook and sheep around. But just so you know, the Bible isn't set in Ireland, nor is it set in central Ohio. It is in the Middle East, and particularly in this story, in the desert, on a mountain. So Moses' daily job was really walking around a place with not a lot of vegetation, showing the sheep where the grass was to eat. And at 80 years old, one day Moses sits down, and there's a bush on fire. And that's not weird. It's the desert. This happens. Lots of things can catch things on fire, lightning strikes, people doing campfires. It's just one little bush. It's not a big deal. The number one thing to understanding the Bible is no one in the Bible knew they were in the Bible. So there's no way Moses is thinking, it is Exodus chapter 3. It's about time for a miracle. And this was, interestingly enough, before the phrase burning bush was associated with miracles. This is when we're talking about the burning bush. It's just a bush that's on fire. It's not a miracle. There's no magic flames. At the very beginning, at least, there's no weird voices coming out of it or anything. And Moses is 80 years old, sitting on a rock. And he looks over, and he does what any self-respecting 80-year-old or 45-year-old person would do. Nothing. He does nothing. Because it's not hurting anyone. The sheep are away from it. This isn't a forest fire situation. We're in a desert. It's fine. Let it go. And he sits there for an hour. And it's still burning. And he sits there for 2 hours. It's still burning. Nothing weird about it, except it's still burning. 3 hours. And then he thinks to himself, this is my favorite direct quote of this story. It says, Moses thought to himself, that's weird. That's weird. What's weird is that this bush keeps burning and burning and burning. So he sits there another hour or two, thinking that's weird. And then finally, he stands up with his creaky 80-year-old bones, walks over to the bush, and he hears, Moses, Moses. And he says, here I am. Which that phrase, by the way, is in all these stories we're looking at. Here I am. And the voice says, take off your sandals, the place you're standing is holy ground. I am God, the God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I have heard the oppression of my people in Israel and have come to rescue them. And Moses, whose name, by the way, means draws out, he says, Moses, go draw them out. Moses, go Moses them. That's what he says. Of course, this miracle escalates fast, right? Like bush burning isn't that weird. A bush talking to you, super weird. But why I love this story, and one of the reasons I love why people call, people will call like miraculous events, they'll use the phrase, oh, it's like a burning bush moment. Was it? Because usually when you say that, what you're saying is something crazy happened. This is the most normal thing that ever happened for, it just kept happening. It's a slow burn miracle. If Moses were in better shape, he probably wouldn't have noticed. If he were a young, spry, 25-year-old shepherd, he'd get bored and just keep walking. If he were in a place where, you know, he was consumed with Twitter and his followers, and what's a shepherd got to do to get verified around here? Like, if those were his concerns, he would have not been looking, he would have not have noticed. But because he was present, he registers, this is weird, and pushes into that. And he says, you know, he says in the King James, behold, right? Oh, look, what's up? Look at this. And that is where it starts for all of us, I think. I do believe in miracles. I believe almost all of them are slow burning. So if I would define a miracle as kind of God doing something in our lives, then most of the time, the miracles we experience are slow burning. I already referenced one in my life, that my wife still loves me and is married to me, slow burn miracle. I can't point to a day when it happened, but it did. God often works in slow, methodical, very natural-seeming ways. And the difference with people who can behold and people who can't often is just that they stop and notice. God is working right now in your life in 1,000 ways or more. You may not realize any of them. The easiest way to see what God is doing and to behold God, because that's what we're really talking about. How do we behold God and God's self? The easiest way is to stop and sit and quite literally stare. Do nothing for a few minutes or an hour. And then you will begin to notice and see and receive all the slow burning miracles that have been happening. But if you refuse to be present, if you refuse to live even 10 minutes of your life without noise, then you may never see it. Or you may notice it at a time well into your life when it's too late to live a life of gratitude for it. But being present now lets us see that. Like I said, there's tons of these behold stories. I just wanted to pick out three as we prepare. Of course, the story of Moses moves on. He does lead the Israelites out of Egypt. They become their own nation. And eventually there are these prophets that are raised up. And there's this desire suddenly for the people of Israel to have a king. And while all this is going on, there's a high priest named Eli. And there's a woman who can't have a baby. She's been barren. Her name's Hannah. She pleads with God for a baby, and finally she does have a baby boy, names him Samuel, and decides that she's so grateful for Samuel, she will give him as a servant to Eli the high priest, so that Samuel will live with Eli in the temple and becomes his servant as a little kid, little boy. One day, Samuel is asleep, and he hears a voice, Samuel, Samuel. Now, He doesn't know that it's the Bible, and every time someone says your name twice, it's God. He doesn't know that yet. He wakes up, he walks into Eli's room, and he says, you called. And Eli is old, he's going blind, and he's taking care of this kid, and he says, I didn't call you, go back to bed. Then Samuel wakes up again. Samuel, Samuel. He gets up, he goes, Eli, you called? I didn't call you, go back to bed. A third time, Samuel, Samuel. Samuel gets up, walks to Eli's room. You called? Eli says, no. Oh. This is the high priest, by the way. It just took him a while. Eli says, this must be the Lord. This is what you do. Go back to sleep. If you hear your name again, just say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Samuel goes back to sleep. He's awoken. Samuel, Samuel. He says, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. Where this story turns kind of weird is then God says, I'm going to basically punish Eli for all the bad things his kids are doing. Let him know. So the poor kid has to deliver this message to Eli. But what happens is in that moment, Samuel becomes not just a kid, but a prophet. Someone who hears God, sees God, speaks for God. And ultimately, Samuel, after he grows up, will be the one that God uses to choose David. To be king. And he becomes a kingmaker because he was open and present to God. I like this story, and there's lots of beholds in it, right? Behold the word of the Lord, behold, behold. It's in there. It's in there a lot if you read the King James Version. For Samuel, you know, in some ways it's easier for a little kid to behold, right? This is why we love to see Christmas and all sorts of things through a child's eyes. It's just easier. What's interesting to me is how Eli comes around. And he is open to the reality that God reveals God's self in many different ways. And that God may be doing this right now with this boy. He's open to that. And in being open to that, in essence, the whole world is blessed with this story. The last story I want to tell you is in Isaiah 6. So as we continue to kind of march through history, and there's all these stories going on. This one I like because it's a little more clear. It's undeniable. So Isaiah finds himself in the temple, and he has this vision of God himself sitting on a throne. The whole temple's filled with his robe. There are all these angels flying around. And Isaiah basically says, behold, right? Like, look at that. Wow. And then he says, I'm not worthy. I'm a man of unclean lips. And so one of the angels comes, grabs a coal from the furnace with tongs and puts it on Isaiah's lips and burns his lips and purifies him. And then God says, who shall I send to the people of Israel? And Isaiah says, here I am, send me. And that begins the career, if you will, of probably the most influential prophet in all of the scriptures. But it starts with this moment and this readiness. In every one of those stories, the phrase, here I am, is there. Moses says, here I am. Samuel says, here I am. Twice. He says it to Eli and to God. Isaiah says, here I am. And implied in the here I am, especially as those stories progress, is send me. Now in the Moses story, Moses pretty clearly says, here I am, don't send me. And God says, well, I don't show up unless I'm going to send you. And Moses says, no. And God does all these miracles with him. And finally, Moses says yes. In the other stories, and so many other stories throughout Scripture, what happens is, in beholding God, in being in the presence of God, several things happen. You connect with yourself. You gain a better, clearer understanding of your purpose in the world. You have generally a very profound experience that changes you. But also you are given some sort of direction, some sort of movement forward. It is in beholding God that we begin to know God, to love God, and in loving God that we begin to receive, if you will, marching orders of love to move forward, to free people, to bring the power of love against the power of darkness, to do the real stuff in a world where now especially we spend most of our time trying to avoid. But wouldn't you rather live a life that is honest and open and present and ready and meaningful? Let's do this. Let's pray for just a second. If you would, close your eyes. And let's just be present. Just be here. For some of us, this is hard. But when a concern from the past comes into your mind, just push it away for now. When a fear or thought about your future, which could be as simple as getting out of the parking lot or what I'm going to do when I grow up or whatever, like, push it away. Just be here. Be present. God is love and God is here. As you're present, God will show you all the slow burn miracles in your life, the ones that are ongoing. Where you know you are loved, that is where God is. Where you know you are loving, that is where God is. God is there. God is here. We're not just present, we're open. To be open is to sometimes physically just helps to just open your palms on your lap, just to have open hands representing an open heart, being willing to receive. And in our prayer time like this, it's when we hear whispers in our spirit that often nudge us towards who to love, a person's name or face or ourselves. It's in these open moments that we become, like Isaiah, confronted with our unclean lips, if you will, the parts of us that are broken and we're embarrassed of and we want to fix. And it is in being open that we can start that hard work. We're present, we're open, and then we're ready. This is the part when we pray, "Here I am. Send me wherever." Some people hate this prayer because they have this image that if I say, "Here I am, send me wherever," I will have to go live with natives in Africa or sell all my possessions. My experience is there's a lot of people in your life God's calling you to love before you need to go to Africa. Maybe someone is called to that, but it is in the "here I am, send me" part of our prayer that we realize, I've been praying for a friend for a long time, but I'm the answer to that prayer. I'm the one God is calling to be present with someone. I'm the one God is calling to make a generous gift to someone. I'm the one that's supposed to mend this relationship. Even if it isn't my fault, I'm ready. Here I am, send me. I'm the one sent to encourage them. Here I am. I actually don't think it's authentically possible to truly get to a place of here I am if you don't start with being present and open, being with God. That was about a 5-minute prayer time. You can do that every day on your own. You don't need me walking you through it. You can do it tomorrow, tonight. We end our prayer time. We say amen. I love prayers that awkwardly end because I think that's the point. A prayer that we begin to walk with God in a way that the lines get blurred between our prayer time and our life. As you go, though, I hope that you would spend time this Advent season practicing that, being open, beholding God, beholding others. One thing you can do tonight as we leave is to take communion on your way out. This is a very tactile, real thing that Jesus has given us to be present in a really unique way. We taste the goodness of God. We bring God into us. So do that. Spend some time in here to pray if you want. Otherwise, have a great week. We'll see you next time.